At that end, there was a pair of double doors which opened onto the night air. Waverley led me onto a sloping balcony bounded by a metal railing. Warm air slapped against my face. I looked back. The balcony surrounded the building where I had awoken, rising up on either side of it. But the building wasn't really a building. It was the gondola of an airship, tipped up at an angle. Above us, the craft's gas bag was a dark mass, pinned between the branches of the canopy. The airship must have been trapped here when the plague hit, caught like a balloon in a tree. The gas bag was so impermeable that it was still fully inflated, 7 years after the plague. But it was crimped and distorted by the pressure of the branches which had formed around it, and I couldn't help wondering how strong it really was, and what would happen to the gondola if the bag was punctured. "It must have happened really fast," I said, having visions of the airship trying to steer itself out of the path of the malforming building. "Not that quickly," Waverley said, as if I'd said something deeply foolish. "This was a sightseeing airship. There were dozens of them back in the old days. When the trouble came, no one was much interested in sightseeing any more. They left the airship moored here while the building grew around it, but it still took a day or so for the branches to trap it completely."
"And now you live in it?"
"Well, not exactly. It isn't all that safe, really. That's why we don't have to worry too much about anyone else paying us any attention." Behind, the door swung open again and the woman emerged.
"An unorthodox place to wake you, I admit."
She joined Waverley next to the railing, leaning bravely over the edge. It must have been an easy kilometer to the ground.
"But it does have its uses, discretion being one of them. Now then, Mr. Mirabel, I expect you are in need of some good food and hospitality. Am I right?"
I nodded, thinking that if I stayed with these people, they might provide a means for me to enter the canopy proper. That was the rational argument for agreeing. The other part was born out of sheer relief and gratitude, and the fact that I was as tired and hungry as she probably imagined.
"I don't want to impose."
"Nonsense. I did you a great disservice in the mulch, and then Waverley rather compounded the error with his ham-fisted stun setting, didn't you, Waverley? Well, we'll say no more of it, provided you do us the honour of providing you with a little food and rest."
The woman took something black out of a pocket, folding it open and elongating an aerial before speaking into it.
"Darling, we're ready now. We'll meet at the high end of the gondola."
She snapped the telephone shut and pushed it back into her pocket. We walked around the side of the gondola, using the railing to haul our way up the slope without slipping. At the highest point, the railing had been cut away, so that there was nothing between me and the ground except a lot of air. Waverley and Sibylline, if that was her name, could have easily pushed me over the edge had either of them meant me any harm, especially in my generally disorientated state. More than that, they'd had plenty of opportunities to do it before I woke up.
"Here he comes," Waverley said, pointing under the sagging curve of the gas bag.
I watched a cable car descend into view. It looked a lot like the one I'd first seen Sibylline in, but I wasn't pretending to be an expert just yet. The car's arms grasped threads entangled around the gas bag, tugging the blimp out of shape, but managing not to puncture it. The car came close, its door opening and a ramp extending out to bridge the gap to the gondola.
"After you, Tanner," Sibylline said.
I crossed the bridge. It was only a step of a meter or so, but there was no protection on either side, and it took an effort of nerve to make the crossing. Sibylline and Waverley